Edgar B. Herwick III, and this is Boston Public Radio. So what does the plight of the underdog, international tension, and personal perseverance all have in common? Well, each one of those is a theme that we see play out every 4 years when the Olympics come around, and really kind of every 2 years because we've got the Olympics now, winter and summer going back and forth. These are also things that we see unfolding time and time again on the silver screen in movies from Chariots of Fire to Personal Best. So here with me in Studio 3, because we are talking movies, is our go-to guy for movies, Garen Daly. Garen, welcome back.
My pleasure to be here.
It's we're happy to have you. So, Olympics and movies, it seems like a natural fit.
Again, it's because you've got all the tension that they're constantly building up on TV, and they're just transferring it to the big screen.
Do you think, I mean, does the fact that this stuff plays out on TV kind of add an element that makes it sort of easier for people to make films about it because, you know, they're sort of packaging it as a story? Or is there something inherent about the Olympics and the way they play out that is ready-made for the big screen?
Well, some of it's already ready-made for the big screen, but I think there's something else that's been a shift in how we have interpreted the Olympics on a cultural level. You know, back in the 30s and 40s, there were very few sports films. There were very few Olympic films, except for documentaries. But over the past 20, 30 years, we're starting to see more and more. And I think part of that is something I come back to all the time is that the audience likes to see something that they already know what's going to happen. Mm. And they feel comfortable with that. And they're reinforced. And so all the elements just make it feel like a feel-good situation for them.
Right. And so do you have a sense of why that started to shift in sort of the world of film? How that started to shift in terms of the audience is starting to want this, or
do you want the easy answer?
Yeah, let's start with the easy answer. What's the easy answer?
Audiences have gotten lazy.
Really?
I think that back in the 60s and 70s, we wanted to explore the world through film. Now we go to the theaters to be comfortable.
You think everybody does that, or is it just, more people are going to the movies now?
No,
so
it's actually more people are not going to the movies right now. But I think it's just a change, and I think a lot has to do with our culture and how busy our culture is and how we need to have comfort every once in a while.
All right.
when we do our entertainment.
So do you tend to, personally, do you tend to like these Olympic films, or are they all kind of one type, or do we see the Olympics being presented in different and interesting ways?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, I'm not sure we see them presented in different and interesting ways, but there's a lot in these films that are very interesting. And like any film, if it's well done, it's going to be good. And there are some very good examples of well-done Olympic films, as well as there's some very bad examples.
All right. Well, let's get into some examples of some films. So I want to start with a film which is called Prefontaine. Now, this is about... Why don't you tell us what the film's about, just generally. Then we'll hear a little bit about it.
The film is about a runner who came out of Oregon, who really popularized the sport of long-distance running. And he was somebody who really just pushed the limits. And this is a biographical story about his story and his journey towards the Olympics.
All right, his name was Steve Prefontaine. Let's hear a little bit from the film. This is a 1997 film, Prefontaine.
Well, we heard about this small kid from Coos Bay who could run.
There's Prefontaine.
Kid we had to see, you know, real fire eater.
He was the last you'd expect to finish first.
Hey, guys. Steve Prefontaine.
It's the Beverly Hillbillies.
But he had the courage to dream.
Forget Jim Ryan, he's done. I'm going to be the first Steve Prefontaine.
All right, so we're hearing some stuff there. The last you'd expect to finish first. The courage to dream.
These are classic sports, classic Olympic things. Because, again, everyone thinks of themselves as an underdog.
Right.
Everyone thinks that they don't have the talent necessarily to do what they're going to do. But if you follow the prescribed, go out and exercise and get to do the discipline and have the desire, you too can win the Olympics.
All right, so what's the essence of, what is the essence of this film, Prefontaine?
The essence is simply is that here's somebody who is not physically not physically enhanced or physically strong enough to be a good runner, but he does become a great runner. And the story is all about him pushing it and going to the Olympics in 72 and not doing well and then getting ready for the Olympics for the next in 76, I believe it was. Maybe I got my years wrong there. But
no, I think you're right.
But unfortunately, his life got cut short. And so he never had. So a lot of people talk about Prefontaine is The Unfinished Story.
Mm. So this is one of those films that has a bit of a tragic end, then.
It has a tragic end, but there's also, you know, as in Hollywood, the fact is that he did popularize long-distance running. He was an amazing character, and he was a role model for many, many people who are challenged physically in some way, who want to go to the Olympics.
Now, it's interesting to me that you picked this film out, because there was a second film that came out right around the same time, also about Steve Prefontaine.
Yeah, Without Limits.
Right? Without Limits.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me, because I think they had sort of two different takes on his story.
Right.
You know, Prefontaine, you're talking about, is kind of your classic, you know, the underdog story. I think that Without Limits focuses a little bit more on the relationship between the player and his coach, mentor-student relationship. Is that a theme typically in a sports movie as well?
There is that coach student or coach athlete is always there. You can think of Downhill Racer. You can think of a lot of different ones. Yeah, another good one would be Miracle, which is about the Olympics team, the hockey team, which we're going to talk about in a little bit later. Those are all cases where the coach is instrumental in helping the athlete. So yes, it is two things. I chose Prefontaine because it was more of a three-act Hollywood film, and the name Prefontaine made it easier for us to remember.
Right, so that's one for those of us who are in the lazy audiences going to the movies.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. Let's get into Miracle, because this is one of those moments that I think is, you know, the quintessential Olympic moment. Like, aside from the fact that a film was made of it, my mom, who does not watch sports, right? Anytime sports comes up, she talks about that moment. She watched that game. She remembers that game. Everybody remembers Al Michaels' call. Do you believe in miracles?
Yeah.
Yes. So let's hear a little bit about the film Miracle, and then I want to talk about the film and how they capture the spirit of that moment.
Back in 1960, Coach Brooks was on the Olympic hockey team. But a week before the games, his coach cuts him and sends him home. And that team went on to win the gold medal without him.
Herb Brooks had given up his dream of Olympic glory until 20 ordinary kids gave him a second chance.
Name?
Mark Johnson.
Buzzy Schneider.
Mike Rizzioni.
You're missing some of the best players.
I'm not looking for the best players, Craig. I'm looking for the right ones.
They were bitter rivals, but one coach had a plan to turn them into a team.
I got no time for quitters.
You want me to play, huh?
I want you to be a hockey player!
I am a hockey player!
Think that'll get them going?
Oh, yeah.
And the one thing you don't hear in this is the spectacular plaid pants that he's wearing through much of this movie. I mean, you can't get that in the sound. Now, it's interesting to me because this is a film, and you hear that even in the trailer, even if you haven't seen the film. This is about the coach. This is his story.
It is and it isn't. It's about the team. It's about, yes, the coach. And let's say something here. Kurt Russell as Herb Brooks is a really good performance. And Kurt Russell is not normally given credit for being a good actor.
That's right.
And he's done a very...
He's a handsome guy.
He's a handsome guy, but married to Goldie Hawn. But he is somebody who does a great job with it. But again, part of this is classic American mythology going on here. You know, if you're ordinary, you have the courage to move forward. You become a team. And these are all classic American themes embodied in this one hockey team taking on the powerful Russians, who were at that time, even though they were considered amateurs, were really professionals. And that's one of the reasons why we love this film. A bunch of ordinary kids slew David.
All right. And in 1980, nonetheless, the midst of the Cold War, right?
Right. So, the evil empire.
Yeah. And so is this, do you see this, is this this element of the ordinary doing the extraordinary, this American mythology of, you know, anybody can do this and slay the giant, do we see that playing out in the Olympics themselves? Is it still happening now? Is that why we watch the Olympics?
Well, that's part of it. Look at Gabby Douglas.
Yeah.
There's a girl who had ended up 2 years ago moving away from her family just to study, and now at the age of 16 is considered the best gymnast in the world.
Yeah. So one of the other things that happens at the Olympics, Garen, and I'm talking with Garen Daly, film critic. We're talking about the Olympics and how the Olympic stories are told on the big screen. You know, one of the points of the Olympics, I think, is international diplomacy, this idea of getting people from all of these countries together in one place, you know, celebrating sport. And so the themes that happen through the Olympics are beyond just what's happening on the field of play. And you look at a film like Munich, which captures sort of one of those moments gone awry in 1972.
Right.
Obviously, the tragedy that happened in 1972 at the Summer Olympics. This is when members of the Israeli Olympic team were taken hostage. They were eventually killed by a Palestinian group. This is a movie that is about the Olympics, Munich, which was done in 2005 by Steven Spielberg.
Right.
But it's maybe not about the games themselves, but about one of the themes that plays out when you take all of these people from different countries, put them together. Let's hear a little bit from Munich, and then let's talk about it.
Good afternoon. I'm speaking to you live just outside the Olympic Village in Munich, West Germany. At this moment, 8 or 9 athletes of the Israeli team are being held prisoner.
These guerrillas are a group called Black September.
They're all gone.
Now, this is a moment. I was too young for this when it happened. Do you remember this happening, Gary?
Oh, of course.
I think, you know, if you listening out there in the car or if you're at home listening, I think this is one of those, for those who were alive in 1972, everybody remembers where they were when this happened. What was the experience like that happening? And does the movie sort of capture that moment? And what is the point of the movie? What's it trying to get at?
Well, there's a lot of points to the movie. And, you know, again, it's a tragedy. And when these tragedies happen in a place where you think you are safe, and you think that we are going for the ideals of humanity, it becomes even much more of an exclamation point.
Yeah.
And, you know, Munich was not the only time. I mean, you know, Americans didn't go to a year because of Afghanistan. There are people who misinterpreted the Black Power sign at the Mexico Olympics. I mean, politics has been part of what's going on. You can go back to Leni Riefenstahl's Olympia and talk about how she used the Olympics to push forward the Aryan dogma of Nazi Germany.
To talk a little bit about that film Olympia, a little bit more.
Leni Riefenstahl made a documentary that about the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, and it essentially was a way of making Aryans look really impressive and Germany look really impressive. When in fact, the biggest story coming out of the 1936 Olympics was some guy named Jesse Owens who just blew everyone's socks off.
yeah, not so bad. So, interesting thing about Munich is it also, I think, gets into a whole different area, which is beyond political tension and sort of the nature of holding a grudge, the nature of revenge, and what that does to us.
Well, what Spielberg does in this is he takes it, makes it a very personal issue, and it's an eye for an eye, very biblical, very Old Testament, and what the cost of that does for everybody concerned is really not very good. And in some ways, that kind of reinforces what the Olympics are supposed to be about, which is an ideal of who we are as a culture, as a world, as a globe, as a people.
Yeah. We're going to shift now to an older film. This is from 1951 about another, and this is another kind of tragedy, not on the scale, the sort of human tragedy that happened in Munich, but sort of the tragedy of one great athlete and him being sort of his great moment being taken away from him. So let's hear a little bit of this film. The film is called Jim Thorpe All-American. The man I'm talking about, of course, is Jim Thorpe.
Jim Thorpe, All-American, the man of bronze who became the greatest athlete of all time. An Oklahoma Indian lad whose untamed spirit gave wings to his feet and carried him to immortality. Here in a mighty cavalcade of sport are all the giants who face this champion among champions, each test adding new honors to his ever-growing fame. Here is the thrilling panorama of the Olympic Games, the nation's praise for its returning hero.
And this is Burt Lancaster playing Jim Thorpe in this movie.
Well, let's put this in perspective. Again, this is 1951.
Yep.
At that point, there weren't very many biopics done on anybody that weren't appealing to anything under 10-year-old boys. This is the first one, which is an adult.
Hmm.
And it talks about an adult theme. Jim Thorpe was a man, an American Indian, a Sauk Fox, who conquered just about every single sport that he ever went to.
Yeah, he even won the 1912 intercollegiate ballroom dancing competition.
He was incredible.
This guy killed everything.
He was, you know, he was incredible. If he lived today, he would be like a multi-million dollar hero for everybody with lots of endorsements. But the fact is that he did extremely well in the decathlon and the pentathlon, winning those events in the 1912 Olympics. He had them taken away many years later when it found out that he played some semi-pro baseball, which essentially was he was getting room and board for the summer while he was working on a farm. And they took away all of his medals because he was not a true amateur.
Yeah.
Underneath all of that is a level of racism because he wasn't Indian and that somehow he was lesser than some of the other people that were out there at that time. And that's why Burt Lancaster made this film, was to show that there was a human here, an incredibly gifted human who was given a raw deal by the establishment.
Did this film bring Jim Thorpe and his story to a wider audience? Did it do well? Was this a story people knew when it was told by Burt Lancaster and the filmmakers?
I don't think a lot of people knew who Jim Thorpe was because it had been about 20 years afterwards, and he ended up being very poor and an alcoholic because of his disappointments. And it took the Olympic Commission 30 years, 1983, before they returned his memo, 30 years after his death, that they returned the medals to him and his family.
And you feel like, you've been talking about the mythology of the Olympics, and again, that theme of people that doing the improbable. Is the amateurism thing, is that a part of that story, of that mythology, the idea of amateur athletes, or is that something we've completely abandoned because we have professional basketball players, we have professional hockey players?
Well, I think that we like the idea. I mean, the idea originally was back in, I think, was it 1896 when they started? The idea was that we wanted amateurs. We didn't want professionals. And at that point, there really wasn't any any professionals to speak of. Mm. Professionalism started really coming in the 1920s when you started getting the Babe Ruths, Joe Louis's, and some of the great boxers of the 20s and 30s. So in some regards, that concept was not even around. Chariots of Fire approaches that when they start talking about what is a true athlete, a true amateur athlete versus a professional amateur athlete.
Right.
And what I'm talking about here is the Eric Liddell versus the Abramson story. Eric Liddell is a religious student in Chariots of Fire who is running for the glory of God. Mm. And Abramson, who is an English Jew, is running to prove himself not only to himself, but also to the country as a whole, because he is Jewish, fighting that kind of discrimination. Now, if you notice, there's a racism thing always going on here, because it's part of that underdog thing that is so prevalent in Olympic films. But in the Chariots of Fire, what I love about this film, and I actually didn't even notice until last night when I was really watching it again.
How many times have you seen Chariots of Fire?
Well, probably about four.
Let's hear a little bit. Do we have some sound of Chariots? Let's hear a little bit of Chariots of Fire. This is kind of, I think this is the quintessential Olympic film.
We are here today to honor the legend. And remember those few young men. With hope in their hearts. And wings on their heels.
Also, one of the other things that comes out of this film, obviously, is the importance of a very inspirational piece of music in a sports film, right?
And where is Vangelis now? but, you know, that clip started off with Honor the Legend.
Yeah.
And that takes place, if you recall the film, it takes place in a church. And at the end of the film, it goes back to the church and a choir starts singing. And as the choir is starting to sing, the camera zooms in to a perfectly pair matched of young identical twin boys. That's that's the set piece for that choir singing. And that's really what this film is about. We have two matched twins, although they're slightly different. They're slightly different personalities. And we're talking about the beginning, the end of the true amateur, the someone who's doing it for God and country, versus the professional amateur who is doing it for reasons that are more understandable to the public. And again, this takes place in 1924,
right,
which is the beginning of that professional period that I was talking about before.
Yeah.
Now we have a completely different set of what the athletes are as they've become icons and gods for the people who are watching these Olympics.
Yeah, and do you think that change has been a bad thing
I think as long as the Olympics hold to their ideal, then we are fine, because then that is really what's good. Unfortunately, we get people who are racist, like the Swiss soccer player or the Greek triple jumper who are racist, or we get the people from the badminton who are throwing it so they get better seeds.
Right.
I mean, those things are going to happen. But then you get something like the American women's gymnastic team,
absolutely,
which is a team that loves each other and supported each other and were just amazing. I mean, I'm just blown away by those young girls.
And you see one Olympian whose dreams are shattered when she doesn't make the all-around individual,
right,
yet still comes out and just totally kicks butt for the rest of the team.
And for us, as Americans, we love that story. That's why we go to the movies to see these.
Absolutely. Now, one thing I do want to ask you is, are these stories that are told, this underdog story, which we, as you just said, we as Americans love, do these translate to other cultures?
Yes,
do other places see this and have that? Does everybody love an underdog?
Everyone loves an underdog. At least, and that's my opinion. But I think that you take a look at some of the great other films that are out there that are from foreign countries that talk about these as well.
So how long until we have a Michael Phelps biopic hitting the screens?
I think it's going to be Gabby Douglas.
You think that's the one?
I love her. I think she's great.
Excellent. I do too. She's terrific. And this has been a terrific conversation. Film and the Olympics. We've been talking here with Garen Daly, film critic. Garen, as always, it's great to have you with us.
My pleasure.
Well, WGBH's Adam Riley heard Chariots of Fire, and he just came running into the studio. How you doing, Adam?
Music. Yeah. I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well. It's Friday, and that means you are going to be taking us down the local news track, huh?
Yes, I will be your guide down that local news path. We're going to be getting very, very local this week. In East Boston, Edgar, I don't know if you know this, but clams have been dying of cancer.
Wow.
Yes. In Jamaica Plain and in South Boston, gentrification has been causing all sorts of controversy.
That's an ongoing problem, yeah.
Yes, it is an ongoing problem. And the All Weekly Boston Phoenix, where I actually worked for almost 7 years, is literally getting glossed over.
That sounds very intriguing. That's
so
Adam Riley.
Those topics and a bunch of other
all
stuff.
All right,
now.
He's going to take on local news. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III, and you are listening to Boston Public Radio.